Listening 1.
You will listen to a conversation. You have 1 minute to look at the questions. You will hear the conversation twice. Now listen.
Tell me about your early life, Robin. Where did it all start?
Well, I grew up in South London, and when I left school, I went to art college.
Art college? You didn't go to music college?
No. Art colleges were more exciting at that time, and I was interested in art too.
How did you start in the music business?
I made my first record in 1969. But there were a few problems with my record label. I had some strong ideas about music, and they didn't agree with me all the time.
So it wasn't a good start. How did you feel at that time?
Well, I didn't feel very happy about my first record, but life was still fun. I sang in small clubs and wrote songs in different musical styles. Then in the mid-70s, I moved to Paris with my girlfriend Bridget. We formed a band with my brother, Julian, and called it M.
How did you think of the name M?
It was by chance. I looked out of the window of a studio in Paris and I saw the M over the entrance to the metro station.
And was pop music M's first record?
No, it wasn't. The first one was Modern Man. That came out in the summer of 1978. I think it was a great record. But it wasn't successful. Then in February 1979, pop music finally came out after months of work.
Were you excited about it?
Yes, I was. It was great when people started buying it. It was popular all over the world.
What did you do next?
Well, after that, I worked with Ryuichi Sakamoto in Japan, and I continued making records, including an album with some African musicians. And, of course, pop music came out again in 1989. I think the song is just a real classic, and a lot of people have covered it.
So, what about now? What are you doing?
I'm working with various artists, and I want to do some live shows with them. You can find out more on my website, www.robinscott.org. There's information about...
Now listen again.
Tell me about your early life, Robin. Where did it all start?
Well, I grew up in South London, and when I left school, I went to art college.
Art college? You didn't go to music college?
No. Art colleges were more exciting at that time, and I was interested in art too.
How did you start in the music business?
I made my first record in 1969, but there were a few problems with my record label. I had some strong ideas about music, and they didn't agree with me all the time.
So it wasn't a good start. How did you feel at that time?
Well, I didn't feel very happy about my first record, but life was still fun. I sang in small clubs and wrote songs in different musical styles. Then in the mid-70s, I moved to Paris with my girlfriend Bridget. We formed a band with my brother Julian and called it M.
How did you think of the name M?
It was by chance. I looked out of the window of a studio in Paris and I saw the M over the entrance to the metro station.
And was pop music M's first record?
No, it wasn't. The first one was Modern Man. That came out in the summer of 1978. I think it was a great record, but it wasn't successful. Then in February 1979, pop music finally came out after months of work.
Were you excited about it?
Yes, I was. It was great when people started buying it. It was popular all over the world.
What did you do next?
Well, after that, I worked with Ryuichi Sakamoto in Japan, and I continued making records, including an album with some African musicians. And of course, pop music came out again in 1989. I think the song is just a real classic, and a lot of people have covered it.
So, what about now? What are you doing?
I'm working with various artists, and I want to do some live shows with them. You can find out more on my website, www.robinscott.org. There's information about...
Now check your answers for listening 1. Listening 2.
You will listen to a conversation. You have 1 minute to look at the questions. You will hear the conversation twice. Now listen.
Melissa, you've travelled to over 60 countries, published 18 books of travel journalism, got lost in deserts, swum in 5 seas, been attacked by wild animals, but in a recent interview you say that your journey has only just begun.
I feel that way, yes. I think as you see more, you realise there's more to see. You visit, say, East India, and then you realise you don't know much about the area. And then you want to go to Nepal and Tibet. So yes, I do feel I'm just starting.
How many years have you been a travel writer?
A long time, more than 30 years.
What changes have you seen in travel and tourism?
Well, many. I think these new airlines that offer cheap flights all over the world have made a big difference. People can now see more of the world, and I think that's a good thing.
And there's a bad side too?
Of course. I think, well, just as an example, Mount Everest. Mount Everest used to be probably the greatest challenge for any traveller. Well, now it's full of tourists. Tour guides can take you up the mountain and you don't need any training because the guides do everything for you. There was the case of Sandy Hill Pittman in 1996. Her guides carried her laptop computer, coffee machine and luxury food up Everest. She even had fashion magazines delivered to the mountain. Now, for me, that's the bad side of modern tourism. You lose some of the mystery.
Melissa, is there any advice you would give to young people who want to be travel writers?
Yes. I think the first thing is that you have to make time to write. wherever you are, in a desert, on a boat, at the top of a mountain. You have to find the time. And if you do it every day, it becomes a habit. The second thing is details. You must look for details. It's no good writing, "The sunset was beautiful." You have to say exactly what colours you saw, how the colours were reflected in the trees and water, how the sun felt on your face. You have to be very detailed and look more deeply than most people.
Now listen again.
Melissa, you've travelled to over 60 countries, published 18 books of travel journalism, got lost in deserts, swum in 5 seas, been attacked by wild animals, but in a recent interview you say that your journey has only just begun.
I feel that way, yes. I think as you see more, you realise there's more to see. You visit, say, East India, and then you realise you don't know much about the area. And then you want to go to Nepal and Tibet. So yes, I do feel I'm just starting.
How many years have you been a travel writer?
A long time, more than 30 years.
What changes have you seen in travel and tourism?
Well, many. I think these new airlines that offer cheap flights all over the world have made a big difference. People can now see more of the world, and I think that's a good thing.
And there's a bad side too?
Of course. I think, well, just as an example, Mount Everest. Mount Everest used to be probably the greatest challenge for any traveller. Well, now it's full of tourists. Tour guides can take you up the mountain and you don't need any training because the guides do everything for you. There was the case of Sandy Hill Pittman in 1996. Her guides carried her laptop computer, coffee machine and luxury food up Everest. She even had fashion magazines delivered to the mountain. Now, for me, that's the bad side of modern tourism. You lose some of the mystery.
Melissa, is there any advice you would give to young people who want to be travel writers?
Yes. I think the first thing is that you have to make time to write. Wherever you are, in a desert, on a boat, at the top of a mountain, you have to find the time. And if you do it every day, it becomes a habit. The second thing is details. You must look for details. It's no good writing, "The sunset was beautiful." You have to say exactly what colours you saw, how the colours were reflected in the trees and water, how the sun felt on your face. You have to be very detailed and look more deeply than most people.
This is the end of the listening section. Now check your answers.